This is Martha May Newell, A Jungian Perspective on Experiencing Ourselves, May 18th, 1992.
In January, when I came, could you just give me a show of hands? I know. Okay, good. It's not essential that you would have been here in January in order to participate tonight. Then I was talking particularly about sound and the persona, one of the concepts in Jungian psychology that has to do with how we present ourselves to others and the varied ways that we present ourselves to others. And my pitch then was pretty much that the persona has been kind of given short shrift in Jungian thought, thinking of it as something to be gotten rid of, something to be worked through, to go beyond. But my feeling is that it's something we use every day, and we have many different persona adaptations. But most importantly, that the word itself comes from the Latin personare, which means through sound. This has been completely lost in the literature, if it was ever there, in Jungian thought. And so that was what I was talking about in January. Because of the interest in sound and also the other senses, I pulled together what we're going to do tonight. This is the first time to do it in this way. I know that many of you do kind of get tired of having people come and read papers to you. Well, I can understand that. I feel the same way myself when I'm in the audience. So we're going to do a little of each tonight. And I have maybe 15 minutes worth or something to kind of tell you where I'm coming from and what it's about and what we're going to do. And then we're going to have an early break, so that I can set up all my toys and get ready for the second part. And we'll, unless it seems really necessary, we'll probably just go straight through that for maybe an hour and 15 minutes, something like that. So if you don't mind, we'll have a little different format tonight. And in the second part, you're going to take part. I'm going to do things, but you're going to respond to it and tell me what you experience if you wish. So we'll have, and you're not going to sit in your chairs all the time either. You don't have to sit and get tired. Just sitting there, we're going to have you get up and move around a bit. So, the things I want to share with you at first relate to partly how I became interested in the senses as a way to experience ourselves. Now, this is both an inner and an outer experience. You know, the senses tell us what's coming from out there, but we also record it inside. And all of our experience in the everyday world is mediated through the senses. So I'm going to share some observation, and then after the break that I mentioned, we'll take part in some simple exercises focusing on one of the senses at a time and share our responses in whatever way you wish. Now, because we all approach our psychological work and understanding of ourselves somewhat differently, I'd like to begin with a story that Jung tells in The Archetypes and the Collective Unconscious. It's in the form of a fairy tale. That always goes over well in Jungian groups, you know, they have fairy tale mentioned, which Jung likely wrote himself, from what I've heard, and it describes his work and how it's misunderstood. So I'm going to just read you the fairy tale. There was once a queer old man who lived in a cave, where he sought refuge from the noise of the villages. He was reputed to be a sorcerer, and therefore he had disciples who hoped to learn the art of sorcery from him. But he himself was not thinking of any such thing. He was only seeking to know what it was he did not know, but which he felt certain was always happening. After meditating for a very long time on that which is beyond meditation, he saw no way to escape from his predicament than to take a piece of red chalk and draw all kinds of diagrams on the walls of the cave in order to find out that which he did not know what it might look like. After many attempts, he hit upon the circle. That's right, he felt. And now for a quadrangle inside it, which made it better still. His disciples were curious, but all they could make out was that the old man was up to something, and they would have given anything to know what he was doing. But then when they asked him, "What are you doing there?" he made no reply. Then they discovered the diagrams on the wall and said, "That's it." And they imitated the diagrams. But in so doing, they turned the whole process upside down without noticing it. They anticipated the result in the hope of making the process repeat itself, which had led to that result. This is how it happened then and how it still happens today. End of the quote. I hope we can each focus on our own process tonight, not knowing ahead of time where it's headed, and see what the results might be of the process as well as where it goes. In this tale, the old man uses his senses in an attempt to learn what it is he did not know. I would suggest we can do this too, and that the psyche also uses the senses as symbols in dreams to help us learn what it is we do not know about our lives. Now, when we list the senses, you know, smell, touch, taste, seeing, and hearing, and of course the proprioceptor sense that lets us locate where our body is and read its inner promptings, we tend to think we know about them. After all, they've been with us all our lives, right? And they're as familiar as breathing. Yet, when I reflected back on what my own personal experience of the senses, the earliest ones, had been, I remembered one when I became aware of seeing when I was about 5 or 6 years of age that revealed a very particular quality to my experience, and I'd like to share that with you. Back then, I realized that I was in my box, in my body, looking out at other people who were in their boxes looking out at me. I could see them through my eyes. I could hear them through my ears, could touch them with my hands, even smell them with my nose, but we each remained separate in our own little boxes, only able to explore through the use of the senses what the other was really like. I remember pondering, I think it was pondering at that age, I'm not sure, on how it was that we met and related. But somehow we did, you know, something happened when you met somebody else. And in addition to the sense data that I received, I experienced a meeting somewhere in the middle between us in a mysterious way, kind of like the way we're meeting tonight. I wondered if others experienced this too, and I also experienced the overwhelming realization that we are all basically alone in this life, each in our own little boxes, using the senses to reach out. Did you ever have an experience like this? Does that ring any bells with anybody? Yeah, I see some heads nodding. Okay, now to focus, and that is an appropriate verb, on seeing for the moment. Seeing is a major modality of our perceptual and conceptual experience. We use many words symbolizing seeing, even though actual seeing isn't involved. We say, "Oh, I see what you mean," analogous to a different or a deeper understanding. Or, "I see through his scheme," analogous to uncovering something devious. Or, "I'll be seeing you around," which is the closest expression to actual behavior of seeing someone, but connoting seeing the person in a general way, or as they go by, or seeing them many times. Do you think of other examples? What are some of the others we use in our language? How do we use sight as a way to talk about?
I see.
Right. Meaning?
I understand.
All right, okay. Any others? Seeing's believing. Uh-huh. Yeah. See here. Or now hear this. Or listen up. Right. Okay. Any others you think of?
You're a sight for sore eyes.
A sight for sore eyes, right. I never could decide why sore eyes see better or worse or whatever than, well, anyhow. It's healing. Oh, okay. Right.
Oh, say, can you see?
Right. Mm-hmm. So it gets into patriotic feelings. Well, pardon?
None
so blind as those who would not see. Okay. This is what I wanted to call to our attention, is how many ways we use the sense of seeing in our language to convey all kinds of things, all kinds of feelings, attitudes, and what I want to lead to then is that the psyche uses seeing symbolism as well. When one dreams, they need a new pair of glasses, or they need to clean their glasses, symbolizing the need for a different or a clearer perspective in some aspect of the dreamer's life. Sometimes people dream about a microscope or a telescope, which has something to do with the attitude, depends on the particular dreamer in the dream, but still with something to do with the distance between the person and what they're looking at. Now for me, seeing nature and all its grandeur had been a source of fascination and enjoyment since childhood days to the present. And one of the most numinous parts of nature for me has been crystals in all their variety and brilliance. This started at summer camp when we were encouraged to look for and collect tiny little quartz crystals which were to be found in the granite of the Colorado Mountains. Nearby, other sites yielded gold and silver as well as quartz and brought the gold rush days to Colorado. I would put the tiny rocks in a special treasure box and take them out often to marvel at them, turn them over and look, different light and so on. It was primarily through this lifelong interest in crystals that I came to understand the concept of the archetype. Jung writes that the archetype is like the preformed patterning that is in a crystalline solution. This patterning will determine the particular kind and form that the crystal will have when shaped, when it crystallizes. For example, the solution from which quartz crystals will be formed will produce six-sided crystals with a point at each end if fully formed. The crystal will be crystals will be of varying sizes and shapes, but all will be quartz crystals and no other kind. So too the archetype of, say, the mother, which will be constellated within us as the mother archetype, but will have individual characteristics that are unique to each of us. Going on now to a sense of hearing, consider what Victor Zucker Kendall calls to our attention if we observe the differences in the behavior of blind and deaf people. The quietness, the equanimity, the trust, one might almost say the piety, so often found in the blind, are in strange contrast to the irritability and suspicion encountered among so many of the deaf. He continues, quote, "The contrast cannot but be termed strange, because actually we should expect the opposite behavior. After all, it's the blind man, so we would think, he whose deficiency practically cuts him off from the world, who must feel the solitary confinement within himself. Yet it is not the blind man who shows the typical reaction of the prisoner, the man spied upon, he who must always be on his guard. It is the deaf man whose most important organ of seeing connection with the outside world has remained unimpaired. It seems as if by the very fact that the blind man trusts himself to the guidance of the ear instead of the eye, other modes of connection with the outside world are revealed to him, modes that are otherwise overshadowed by the dominance of the eye, as if in the realms from which he thus comes, with which he thus comes in contact, man were less alone, better provided for, more at home than in the world of visible things to which the deaf man is directed and to which an element of foreignness always clings." End of quote. Goethe wrote in the introduction to Farbenlehre, "A blind man to whom the infinity of the visible is denied, can grasp an infinity of life in the audible." End of quote. In my own experience, hearing has been the predominant sense through which I learned about and enjoyed the world about me. Ever since I marched about the basement playroom at about 5 or 6 years of age again to a recording of the Parade of the Wooden Soldiers, music has been particularly important to me. Through the years, I've played the drums, mostly the snare drum, in bands, orchestras, marching, and dance bands. And I started playing in the rhythm band in kindergarten, this got me launched, and then added the study of piano in the third grade, adding voice study in 74 and the study of the Irish harp in 1976. While both of the last two involvements with music were conscious choices, I believe they were based upon deeper imperatives from the unconscious concerning my own journey and unfolding. To illustrate, let me share a few of the dreams I have had that have used hearing as a symbol. Early in my analysis, after entering the training program at the Jung Institute in New York, I dreamt the trainees are at an exhibit, and I'm showing one how to do a five-stroke roll and a triplet on the snare drum. End of the dream. The five-stroke roll and the triplet are two of the 13 basic rudiments of snare drumming and would have represented a technical outer skill that I brought to my analysis and relationships. Another dream soon afterwards, I'm at a conference and there's going to be a jazz session and I'll play drums. End of the dream. I have short dreams. This would seem to illustrate my reliance on old ways of behaving and presenting myself that I was still using. I would have been quite comfortable playing the drums and providing the background beat for others to do their things in a thing in a jazz group. It's also something I knew how to do that others didn't, so I could count on getting some attention. As my drum teacher observed once, everyone watches the drummer, so you might as well give him a good show. Later, after I began group therapy, I dreamt, I see what musical instruments the group can use now that the old ones aren't usable anymore. End of the dream. The old ways of expressing feeling aren't usable anymore. I'm to find new ones through the group. More recently, after a visit to Ireland, I visited an old Irish castle to see why the music was so good. End of the dream. I had begun to study the Irish harp at that time that I had this dream, but needed the impetus of the dream to explore Celtic music and my own Irish ancestry. It also led to working on this lecture topic. Now, the Irish have a number of legends concerning the harp, which is understandable, and one of my favorites is one that I told in January that several of people here reacted to and have each time I share it. And it's a creation legend about a gigantic harp called the Harp of Life. The legend says there was a gigantic harp that stretched higher than heaven and lower than hell. And as the Creator plucked each string, a different creature came forth. What string was plucked when you came forth? What did it sound like? Now, harps were considered by the Irish and others to have magical powers. In Irish myths, they could be used to enchant, to lull one to sleep, to help one to mourn, to call one to battle, to bring one to laughter, and help one to heal. In Greek legends, the power to enchant was a central part of the myth of Orpheus. Pythagoras was fascinated by the enchanting power of Orpheus's music and wondered in poetic form how Orpheus could play, quote, such notes as warbled to the string, drew iron tears down Pluto's cheek, and made hell grant what love did seek. Pythagoras reasoned that if the power of music is felt by all living creatures and things, even by trees and stones, which followed Orpheus when he played, there must be in the principle of life itself, in the soul of man, and of universal nature, chords that can answer to the touch of harmonious sound. It is the harmony of the spheres that Pythagoras wrote about, not just the music of the spheres. He asked, may it not be the most essential truth about the soul that it is in some sort an instrument of music? He concluded that the attainment of that purity, which is to release the soul at last from the wheel of incarnation, may now be construed as the reproduction in the individual of the cosmic harmony, the divine order of the world, and that herein lies the power of music over the soul. End of quote. Now, before we begin the experiential mode of this evening, I'd like to suggest that you approach what we will be experiencing as freshly and openly as you can. I know that for some, this will be immersing you in the experience of your fourth function, in Jungian terms. So if you become too overloaded or fatigued, it's okay to drop out for a while. But I hope you'll return soon and take up the exercises as possible routes to a deeper understanding of yourselves. Let the exercises be what a colleague of mine has called psychoactive. He shared the following to illustrate what he meant. He said, I was traveling on a plane, half-heartedly watching a Willie Nelson film called Honeysuckle Rose. Without warning, I found myself starting to cry, quite inexplicably. It went on and on. At first, my thoughts were taken up with being embarrassed and trying to hide this outpouring. But then I noticed something behind all that. It was the sound of singing, and guitars so definite and yet so veiled in some way. I couldn't figure it out. I knew it was more than a sentimental reaction to a grade B movie, but I couldn't figure it out. Not long afterwards, I was telling this to my father in response to something he had said. At this, he told me of something I had not known, that when I was a baby, he sang to me, singing along to country western music records as a way of trying to cure his stammering. I never knew he stammered. But that veiled singing was a memory of all this triggered by Willie Nelson. And then the veil parted, and I could remember all this distinctly, and being able to make out the voices of Hank Williams and the Sons of the Pioneers and many others that had been so long absent from my memory. He concluded, since then, I've become a country music addict. So I hope that what will be participated in after a short break while I set up all my toys will be psychoactive for you. Now, in order to not lose whatever's on your mind at the moment, do you have any questions or comments at this point? Yeah.
Thinking of golden sections, you know what golden sections are, thinking of
usual. It just rings a tiny little bell in my head.
I'm just curious.
Yeah. No, I do know about the golden things, but I haven't read that much about it, so I'll claim ignorance. But it's worth following up, yeah. Right, thank you. Any others?
Well, I just think that when I was younger, I struck a chord on the guitar and listened to it. I don't think I ever had experience with that. There's something right about the chord. It's mysterious even today why I chorded the chord. It's a very, very strange mathematical illusion. But it definitely is nice and common. Listening, you
know,
like certain chords.
Right. It is a mystery, I think. I would agree. But it's also interesting to go back at the times when some particular chord or instrument or sound came through to you in a way that really registered, where kind of you resonated with it. And I think we've all had some of those kinds of experiences where something made a difference because of the way we listened. I think also perhaps something we've seen. So we're going to do three of the senses tonight. I'd like to do all five and even more, but we're a little limited on time. So we'll take a short break about... Before the break, we're going to do several things where you're going to move around a little bit and also sit and listen. I really just want to invite you to pay close attention to your experience of what happens when you're going to be looking and seeing and touching. It'll be out there, but it's also going to be inside you. And see if you can be aware of both. There may be images, fantasies, recollections, psychoactive things that happen that will be evoked by each sense. Just make a little mental note of them, and I'll ask you to share them as you wish at the end of each exercise. Now, the first one's going to be on seeing. Now, some of you have already taken in the fact that something happened down at that end of the room and something happened at that end of the room. There are two objects sitting on the stand there and one on the table there. I want you to get up and just somewhat leisurely go by and see each of them. You can walk around them, you can touch them, but probably you better not pick it up because then others can't see as well. But relate to them, you know, really see what's there and see what you're experiencing while you do that. Now we'll take about, 5-8 minutes. Just get up and go either way. Come back and sit down after you've had a good look. I came to understand the archetype. What happened for you? What did you see? What did you touch it with your seeing as well as your fingers? What went on? Anybody who'd like to share something? Yeah.
I went to the smaller clubs with her, and really the quality of the smaller clubs that we were getting out to the Western Club saw was a big smile with her. So there was a big contrast when I saw the other one. I realized all of a sudden all the things that I knew about the other one that really didn't absorb the consciousness of it. It was about when I saw the other one.
And there's something about the shapes in which the crystal was caught by the holes in the wood. There's something very human about it. And when I went to the other one, there wasn't, it was very cold. And I didn't like its acoustic ability, and so I came around. But there's something about this side of it that was kind of scary.
Okay. Others? What did you experience inside, as well as liking and seeing? Yeah.
In both of the
Thank you. Yeah.
I noticed, I felt like it was. And I noticed that this one over here, the contrast between crystal, hard, angular, fine lines, and the flowing organic nature. There are people I noticed who are touching the wood.
Okay. Yeah.
Both of them affected me very clearly, and I really got it going, and my breathing was still affected by it, just standing there and looking at it. It didn't really move me back.
Okay. And is your breathing faster or deeper? Does that happen to you very often?
Well, not like this.
Not like this. Okay.
Although I
did
well.
I emphasize
a lot.
Okay, thank you. Did you have a hand up?
Well, I just found this aesthetic of the
Okay. Yeah.
This one behind me, there's a particular angle I'm looking at when the crystal is sitting on top of the wood, I can see between the two. And the experience was reminiscent of a child being able to look at it. So it felt, it kind of pulled me back into that.
Yeah.
Well, it was perfect. I felt the sense of having a time and seeing the turn on that for a time in my life, especially when I was there. And so I was just very quick to watch my mind making any categorizations and cross-references and doing other people's feelings, living in, so we could be investing in feeling and living for hard I was looking.
Took the assignment very seriously, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, well, when I was looking at this one, it was sort of like, okay, now we're not supposed to do, and that's what we're doing, etc. But I come around to this one, I immediately remember getting yelled at by my parents for not trusting my vision. I think I choked out things like that out of my vision. And then I had to remember, oh, yes, now it's both the crystal. All I remember about was getting half of the freezer.
Yeah, Kate?
Well, Well, I went over here to this one first, and I immediately saw a dragon coming out of the water with the jewel in the center, and then I decided that I went to school too long.
Really fits the format, huh? Any others? Yeah.
Well, I found myself in a lot of feelings and I didn't really want to touch that one. I need to have something to do with the food and food and cold. If I wanted to feel it, find out if it was really cold, of course, it isn't warm.
Was it warmer than your hand? Been in the back of Kate's car, I think that's why.
Why
are they? Are they? Uh-huh, okay. All right, now, yeah, one more.
I just, on this one, guys, like a piece of art that was just saying what hardness is all about, you know? Hardness, that was big. And this one over here, I thought it was one of those, if I were to go deeper, more mythological, more poetic, you know? I almost did it on the sea, I thought, something like this court on the sea. For top of my mind, Britain was Noah's Ark animal life. But that was not the one.
Yeah. Okay, now you can see the variety of response and experience in using the same sense that each of you has experienced. You've all done the same things, but you've had a different experience. So this will probably continue, and I hope you'll feel free to continue to share it. Now we're going to turn for a little bit to the sense of touch. And lest you get anxious, it's going to be safe, it's okay. But I think we take for granted, again, the touch is... Oh, you know, that's how you tell if something's hot or cold. That's how you tell if it's rough or smooth. Yes, it does all those things, but it also tells us a great deal more. So I'm going to try out something now tonight that I haven't done before, but it seemed like a good idea. And that is to have you each find one other person that you're going to share something with. And you're each going to find something in your pocket or in your purse, your briefcase, something that's yours, maybe something you like, maybe just an everyday object, I don't care what. You're going to share that with the other person silently. No talking. And we'll give you a little time to do that, and then I'm going to ask you some questions. So this sense, incidentally, helps us to locate not only actual data about what we're touching, but it often opens up a good deal more, and I'm just going to put you up to seeing if that happens. So now, find one other person.
Each person
finds some. They're going to have two objects, and you're going to give it to the other person, and they're going to just touch it. I want you to keep your eyes closed while you're touching the object. Don't look at the other person or get all caught up in that. We want you talking. Now, who would like to share with the whole group what you learned about the other person, what this experience was like, you know? We don't do this too often. What happened? Yeah.
Well, the person who shared with me is someone I know quite well, but getting this particular object, it was learning something about it. Another side of it that we really know, mm-hmm. different contexts.
Did you identify the object as you had it in your hand?
Oh, yeah, very easy to identify. Mm-hmm. The way it was showed me a different side
mm-hmm.
of it.
Okay.
Cannot associate.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I found a little dot chapstick.
Really transported you, huh? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Touch can do that. Okay, yeah.
Can I tell you what the object was?
Well, or tell us what you experienced first and then what the object was.
The energy sort of thing where I spoke.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a ring. And I knew from holding the ring that he had, it was a ring similar to mine, but in which we wear them all the time and they no longer have their spiritual
quality.
And that there were associations with having this thing, that what you can make from that feel from.
Thank you. Okay. Others? Yeah.
Well, the object, I last list the object before I did. The thing that needed instruction was the smoothness of the surface. I like the smoothness of the surface, and yet the lines of it were finely chiseled and precisely made, and they didn't take care of. And there was a little hole in every part of the object. And then it opened up, and then I realized that it was a knife. And the knife was a razor sharp. So it was a small surface, it was very small, but asymmetrically made. So it had this wonderful quality of not being one half. Smooth is almost silken quality of the surface. And it brought me back to something that I used to do a lot of time ago, which was a mountain by rock manager. And it was a manufacturer of climbing instruments called Johnson. His name was Bob Holt. And he made these things just as fine as it was. The surface of these things was pristine and pure, and it really felt like surgery. And it's very nice to see the kind of many years that people are like to be real smooth and silky. And they were instrumental. So it's not just female and male, but higher and female. So it's just, quite no.
Thank you. Any others? Yeah. Excuse me.
I found a musician with my object. It was a Walkman. And my partner was a
musician. Okay. And yours?
I got a key ring. And I saw it in a photo. It was in a vacation spot. It had two keys on it. One called a house key.
Good, thank you. Now, I think, having not done this before, I'm really delighted with the variety of response which you've had, because you did learn something about the other person. You also varied in your, just the experience of touching and relating to whatever objects you receive. There's many other kinds of things we could do, but I want to have enough time to do my favorite one, which has to do with hearing. So we're going to go now, I did this intentionally, starting with a clear object out there, the crystals, and then moving to an object that both was out there, but also that you were relating to through touch. Now we're going to go inside. The sound's going to come from the outside, but you're going to experience it inside. You can't experience sound out there. It does come from there, but you don't know about it. You've got to be the processor over here. So what I'm going to do is just have a few different single sounds that I just want you to see what happens. Where do you feel it in your body? What happens to you when that sound is present in your environment? There's about 1, 2, 3, there's 4 of them. Then we'll listen to what you experienced, and then we're going to go to some taped music of varying types, and we'll have a little chance to listen to 2 or 3 of those, and then we'll talk about it some, and I'll try to time it right to come out for when you're supposed to be able to go home. So just relax, be comfortable, close your eyes if you want to, then I won't know whether you're paying attention or not, and that's okay. The bell that I used both at my talk in the fall, this is a Tibetan bell. I've taken the clapper out of it so that it can have the beautiful sound that it has when it's touched with wood. So close your eyes if you want to. Now, we had a discussion last time, as I recall, where some of you tried to convince me that they could hear better with their eyes open. I have now come to accept that view for others, but not for myself. So do whichever feels good to you, and we'll get going. I'm not going to comment on these. We'll just go from one to another with a little space in between. Would you like to come back for a minute and tell us what happened? I know for some of you it was a bit much. And this seems to be a typological phenomenon. We sensates love it, you know, the more the better. Others of other typologies, both feeling and intuitives, find that especially the quartz singing bowl, gets to them and is almost unpleasant, and that's why I try not to do it too loud. I can do it even louder, but I won't.
And it sounded like feedback. Like when I shouted and you did it, I thought your mic was too close to the speaker or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I didn't realize it was being on the speaker.
No, I was just letting the bowl do its thing.
What were you saying?
Just a rubber-tipped stick. You're welcome to come up and see it afterwards. They're called singing bowls. They're made out of quartz. They're made for the computer industry, I understand, and these are rejects that ended up in the New Age bookstores, and they make a wonderful sound, so. So now, what else? Where did you feel the sound? Where did it happen in your body? Different places for each one? Okay. Yeah, go ahead. In your head. Okay. Yeah.
Well, for me, the very first one was more cerebral, like on a tip in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, I think I felt it sort of more in my lower body. The third one was almost meditative.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't hear that over and over again, I could meditate again.
Right.
And then the fourth was almost like, you know, the summit of God.
Okay. Yeah, I hadn't thought about my mic picking it up some. I really should have paid attention to be far enough away from it, because it does its own thing without me doing being near it. Yes. Sound can do marvelous things. Yeah, thank you. Yes.
I love that. And it seems like for any and all of them, my sensitive just loves me. Sound has that magical quality of sending and that they can go for us. It goes beyond these walls, it goes through the trees, it goes out the open, and everything here is different. But it is all from one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm here, the fact that I record my life, because my self becomes the ghost of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that all of
this.
And the beauty of God knows that everything is really the ghost of God. You know, that I'm struggling with some of my
struggles.
But that is also a being.
Thank you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So I apologize if it was too much. I did try to cool it this time from when I did it one other time, because I had one person who was ready to leave the room. And I couldn't blame her. Yeah. Yeah.
So the first wave, I feel like the process of music happens, the vibration, the first goal. It's like sometimes it's saying,
no more.
It's like sometimes like something else can happen that could have happened, it's really loud and more. It's like being a human being.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the first two had marginal effects, the second one actually kind of almost crazy. And mm-hmm. I mean, the third was the gift of them.
First and the third ones were Tibetan bells. The second one was a Japanese one. And the fourth one was a man-made quartz bowl. Yeah, right. Right. Oh, thank you. Yes. Just simple tones, but they really do evoke both memories and places, and you know, that's psychoactive. That's just the kind of thing I was talking about. It really touches things that are of psychological significance or a part of one's life. And sound has that capacity, especially. Smell also does. I have a whole thing I could do on smell, but there wasn't time to do it tonight. But I'm sure you've had the experience of sniffing something, and it brings back a whole flood of memories, you know, of your grandmother or of when you were somewhere, whatever. Yeah.
Well, that large bowl, I was very uncomfortable with it, but I smelled something burning.
Okay.
I felt very trapped.
You're burning out your circuits, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I hope it wasn't too much. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
the first goal obliterated thought, and that's the original title, it blocked that emotional statement.
Okay. All right, now let's go to the tape, and we'll just have some segments that I tape myself. I'm not the best engineer, so there's going to be times when they're one right after the other, but bear with me. And we'll stop after a couple of them, and or three, depending on which they are, and talk about them a little bit. Yeah, just go ahead. Pardon? Maybe. I'll wave to you.
Are there any instructions for us?
No, you're going to do the same thing as you did with these. Just close your eyes or whatever you want to do and take part. keep going. Engineer. We'll stop for a moment before we get into the Irish harp. And that sequence had one excerpt in it that I hadn't planned. Sorry about that. That's my poor engineering. What happened for you? Yeah.
The first one brought up the image that four Olympians in front of the beauty of the bonfire. You got done. And under the tree, that's how I saw it. And then I had people. And I used to have four women watch the lives go around. That drum, conch shell, all that kind of thing. They had it. Had it slightly dark. You know, dark is called. They had it slightly dark.
Okay. Yes.
First one also had a Native American association actually behind the one there. And we feel that line where fire is big, going into fire to the earth, and then Thank you for sharing that. Yes.
Well, a couple things happened to me. One, the whole experience reminded me of the importance of sound, just the sound, and how often I use it to try to think. And I remember, of course, certain times when I'm working, I'm trying to do some of the sound that I would try to soothe it again. But this particular piece, of all of them, I realized it was a deep topic. First one. It's very hard for me to think, which is a good thing. It just, at that point, it can really just take me away from the thinking part and just forget myself. Whereas the other music doesn't have that kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah.
For me, music is important. For me, I look at the sincerity of the music in my own experience to it. And the drumming, what sounded also to me like Native American drumming in the background, it sounded to me very, very deep and powerful and real and very old, or at the very least, a very sincere attempt to duplicate that. But the higher string hitting type sound to me were a distraction that was overlaid but couldn't match the depth of the other and couldn't help but see that my judging track was very accurate.
Yes.
Basically, secondly.
Go ahead.
For me, there was a definite shift in the spatial. So, like, the first one was very urban, machine learning, and visual with being an elevator, the longest elevator
that you ever had, right?
And the little cones for floors. And then I was the second one. I was on the touring birds, you know, wild seascapes, and the third one was really kind of the part of the house, so the landscape.
Thank you. Now, one of the things I found in doing this before, and I'm still experiencing it tonight, is that my tolerance for segments is longer than I think the people that I'm playing it for the first time. So I apologize if I'm sort of really straining you, but I shortened it even from the last time. So, yeah.
The one with drums is, I thought it was dramatic and great, but the rhythm was stumbling, and I got the sense of flight, exodus, as if a village was burning and people were just flooding away from the village, you know, moving away as fast as they can. Of course, they're running onto a plane, which is never ending or something. And then, well, the other one was definitely, like someone said, sad, you know, it was like, just like a bird that could fly between the poles or could go back down. So,
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
The first one reminded me of two girls, my two daughters, because they each have a different view of their own, and the way they in contact and fight each other, you can't figure out which one to listen to, but the other person is talking to them. And the gray one, which reminds me of the third one, that I would associate with the people. The gray one reminded me of being a child that I feel very low and very apart from.
Thank you. It was a pan flute. Hotter. Okay. All right. We've got a few more to go, so let's. We're going at the Irish harp now. You're getting all my favorites. Bring you back for a moment. Where have you been and what happened? Your bad news, huh? Ah, okay. And what particularly? The long notes? Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for letting me know. Yeah.
I thought that was really good.
And, really wasn't.
It was
Okay, let's go on because we've got a couple more and I know we're going to be running out of time here shortly. We'll stop it there. If you'd like to make a few other comments or you want to just leave on that note, we can. And I thank you all for providing most of the content of the workshop.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright CGU and Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.